Sohal Gupta from India and G. Hoji Benz from Belgium has sent us reception reports. So, Najmuddin, G, and Sohal, thank you for the reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And let's see who has sent us a piece of writing, email, or a letter from Russia. We've received an email from Alexei Kolakov. As you know, Alexei Kolakov is one of our old and regular listeners. From India, we've received an email from Bashir Ahmad. Michael Hudak from the Czech Republic has sent us a piece of email. From Finland, we have an email from David Mobby, one of our regular listeners. And the last but not the least in this edition of Listeners Special is an email from Je Hoji Benz from Belgium. Stay with us, please. We will be back with you with these great emails from around the world. Welcome back. So let's see what Alexei Kolakov from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, says. He says, "Dear staff, I want to ask you a question. Can I listen to other services of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran and send you via email a reception report? Please write your answer to this email. Thank you." First of all, salam and greetings to you, Alexei Kolakov from Russia, and thank you very much for this email. So, you asked whether you could be able to listen to other services of IRIB radio stations in other languages and sent us via email a reception report. And I have to say that you can keep in touch with other radio stations of IRIB via their own emails. They surely have their own email address, which are allocated only for their own listeners. Anyway, thank you for your kind attention, Alexei Kolakov from Russia. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as confirmation to this email. Well, from India, Bashir Ahmad has sent us a piece of email. Bashir Ahmad says, "Warm greetings. My name is Bashir and I always like to write to you and talk about global affairs. I like your analysis programs and new sections. I wish you and all listeners a world full of prosperity." And salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran. Appreciations to you, Bashir, for this email. It's good to hear that you like the analysis program and new section. And you're interested in global affairs, of course. We also wish you a world full of peace, prosperity, and justice. We also wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. An EQSL card will be sent to you on behalf of IRIB English Radio. After a short break, I will be back with you. From the Czech Republic, we've received an email from Michael Hudak. Michael says, "Dear Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I'm sending you the report of receipt of your station in the Czech Republic. I hope my report is okay with your playlist and will send me your QSL or an electronic QSL. Thank you very much. Best regards." Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Michael Hudak from the Czech Republic. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And it's good to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio is heard in your region and in your country, the Czech Republic. An EQSL card will soon be sent to you on our behalf, Michael Hudak from the Czech Republic. We wish you all the best. And we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon and hear your views about our radio broadcast. And here from Finland, David Moby, one of our regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. David says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I am a DX listener since a teenager and still going strong at the age of 72. It's been some time since I last sent you a reception report from my home here in Turku in southwest Finland. I do hope that you are all keeping well. Your station is really something special as you give another way of looking at what's going on in this world of ours. Yesterday, Friday, I tuned in to your radio. Your signal was strong and your modulation level varied during the program but was on average better than usual compared to the past few months. From previous correspondence, you may recall that I like to listen to your news analysis broadcast. Today was no exception. It's great to get the Iranian perspective. I wonder if you could supply me with a full program schedule of your daily broadcast. I know I would also enjoy a lot of Iranian music and features about your history. I really hope you can send me your EQSL. May I thank you kindly in advance and look forward to hearing from you soon." Salam and warm greetings to you on this warm, sunny Sunday of summer, David Moby from Finland. So, you're 72 and you're still going strong, being a DX listener since you were a teenager, and it's great. And you're from Turku in southwest of Finland. And it's good to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio are well heard in your region in Turku. As you said, the proof is that the signals of IRIB English Radio was strong and the modulation level varied during the program but was on average better than usual compared to the past few weeks and months, of course, you said. David Moby from Finland, thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, and thank you for this detailed and elaborate email you sent to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our appreciations to you for letting us know your views about the quality of the signals and the programs. As you said, you like the analysis broadcast, the analysis programs, the news analysis. So you listen to it regularly and you like the Iranian perspective, which is fair, unbiased, and of course, accurate. You can find the program, the full program schedule on our website, which is parstoday.ir/en. And there also you can find the archive of our programs, the programs about Iranian music, Iranian market, Iranian tourist attraction sites, many other programs. There we have the online programs and archive of the programs. So please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. After a short break, I will be back with you, dear listeners. Welcome back. Let's see what Jay Hojibens from Belgium says. "Dear IRIB, I have much pleasure in informing you that I heard your station and I hope you will be interested in my reception report. My receiving location is Befe, situated in the Ardennes, about 100 kilometers southeast of the town Brussels and 20 kilometers on the border of Luxembourg. Will you please check this reception report of your station? And if it is correct, please verify my reception report by your QSL verification. Many thanks for your kind attention." Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Jehojibens from Belgium. We are so glad that we hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region, in Befe. As you said, it is situated in the Ardennes, about 100 kilometers southeast of Brussels, and 20 kilometers on the border of Luxembourg. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And many thanks for your kind attention. And dear listeners of Listeners Special, before saying goodbye to you and before ending the program, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Najmuddin from Bangladesh, Jay Hojibens from Belgium, Sohal Gupta from India, Alexei Kulakov from Russia, Bashir Ahmad from India, Michael Hudak from the Czech Republic, and David Mabi from Finland. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and the program Listeners Special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanahu
Explaining the services performed for the people. Say to the people what you have done. It is possible that these propaganda, may Allah forbid, have an influence on a group of people that are not familiar with the issues. What we have heard from the administrators is that in every aspect we have seen that amount of work that this Islamic Republic has done for the poor and underprivileged classes is huge and was not achieved throughout the reign of the Pahlavis. We are seeing that wherever these officials go to and take action, the people there usually complain to them of what they have and what they do not have. They had not even constructed a road for these poor and wretched people, and nor a clinic for these rural people, and these villages are existing in the most oppressed conditions.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, on the subject of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his movement, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "The Imam of the Muslims had taught us to rise against a tyrant in any age who rules ruthlessly over Muslims. Even though your strength happened to be inconsistent, you should display your disdain and denial." You know, the events surrounding Ashura, particularly the stand of Imam Hussein alayhi salam against injustice and oppression, inspires us to be steadfast in upholding truth and justice, even in the face of adversity. The stand of Imam Hussein alayhi salam against the rule of Yazid highlights the importance of rejecting tyranny and oppression in all forms. On the day of Ashura, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam saw his nearest and dearest killed in front of him. For one close friend to die is emotionally traumatic. Imam Hussein alayhi salam saw his childhood friends, his brothers, cousins, sons, family members, and even his 6-month-old child all killed in front of his very eyes. He had to gather their bodies. In the space of hours in the day of Ashura, his loved ones were all killed. He knew his women and children would be taken captive after his death, yet he did not waver at once. However, he tolerated all these bitter incidents for the sake of his aim, which was the denial of oppression and the oppressors. Ashura teaches us to fight against injustice and oppression, promoting a society based on compassion, equality, and human rights. Thank you very much for listening to us in this episode. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 31st verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وقل للمؤمنات يغضضن من أبصارهن ويحفظن فروجهن ولا يبدين زينتهن إلا ما ظهر منها وَلْيَضْرِبْنَ بِخُمُرِهِنَّ عَلَى جُيُوبِهِنَّ وَلَا يُبْدِينَ زِينَتَهُنَّ إِلَّا لِبُعُولَتِهِنَّ أَوْ آبَائِهِنَّ أَوْ آبَاءِ بُعُولَتِهِنَّ أَوْ أَبْنَائِهِنَّ أَوْ أَبْنَائِهِنَّ أو أبناء بعولتهن أو إخوانهن أو بني إخوانهن أو بني أخواتهن أو نسائهن أو ما ملكت أيمانهن أو التابعين غير أولي الإربة من الرجال أو الطفل الذين لم يظهروا على عورات النساء ولا يضربن بأرجلهن ليعلم ما يخفين من زينتهن وتوبوا إلى الله جميعا أيها المؤمنون لعلكم تفلحون.
And tell the believing women to reduce some of their vision and guard their private parts and not expose their adornment except that which appears thereof, and to draw their head covers over their chests, and not display their adornment, except to their husbands, their fathers, their husbands' fathers, their sons, their husbands' sons, their brothers, their brothers' sons, their sisters' sons, their women, that which their right hands possess, or those male attendants having no physical desire, or children who are not yet aware of the private aspects of women. And let them not stamp their feet to make known what they conceal of their adornment. And turn to Allah in repentance, all of you, O believers, that you might succeed.
We said that there are some characteristics for women, which is mentioned in the verse, and there are three sentences that talk about the issue of veil. At first it says, لَا يُبْدِينَ زِينَتَهُنَّ إِلَّا مَا ظَهَرَ مِنْهَا. Do not display their adornment except that which is ordinarily apparent. We said that the purpose of adornment is mentioned differently by different commentators.
Some of them say that hidden adornment is the very natural adornment. I mean, the women's beautiful body, whereas the Arabic word zina has rarely been applied in this sense. Most of the commentators have considered it as the place of adornment because the display of adornment itself, such as earrings, bracelets, and others, is not forbidden. But displaying the place, displaying where they are used, such as ears, necks, and arms, and hands, is forbidden. Therefore, based on this explanation, women totally are not allowed to display their adornments that are usually hidden, though their limbs are not shown. Consequently, showing special ornate clothes that women wear under their usual clothes or veil is not permitted because the Holy Quran prohibits the display of such adornments either. In many traditions that are narrated from the Ahlul Bayt, from the Infallibles, alayhimus salam, we see the same matter that the interior adornment in Arabic is interpreted as necklace, an armlet, and anklet. Moreover, since in many of the Islamic narrations, the apparent adornment has been interpreted as ring and so on, we see that the purpose of the interior adornment is also the adornment that are hidden.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, brothers and sisters, as we said, there are three sentences for the issue of veil, which is of the women's characteristics. The first one was that they should not display their adornment except that which is apparent. لا يبدين زينتهن إلا ما ظهر منها. Now, the second one, وَلْيَضْرِبْنَ بِخُمُورِهِنَّ عَلَى جُيُوبِهِنَّ. They should draw their veils over their bosoms. The Arabic word خُمُر is the plural form of خِمَار, which originally means veil, but it is usually applied to the thing with which women veil their head, something like the scarf. The Arabic word جُيُوب is the plural form of the word جَيْب, that means the color of a shirt which is rendered to the throat, and it is sometimes applied to the upper part of the breast because it is located near that part. So, it is understood from this part of the verse that before the revelation of this verse, women wore their scarf in a way that they put their scarf behind their head so that their neck and a part of their breasts were visible. The Holy Quran, now in this verse, enjoins them to wear their scarf in a kind of way that that part of their neck and those parts of the breasts are visible that were visible previously are to be veiled. This is how the Holy Quran tells them, وَلْيَضْرِبْنَ بِخُمُرِهِنَّ عَلَى جُيُوبِهِنَّ. They should draw their veils over their bosoms. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. And in this program, we will discuss America's horrendous legacy in Afghanistan. So, stay with us.
In this special episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss a trail of US misdeeds in Afghanistan. And we shall also take a look at the motive behind launching the so-called War on Terror.
The withdrawal of the United States from Afghanistan 2 decades after its unwanted arrival in the country left behind a nation grappling with uncertainty and turmoil. As we mark 2 years since its shameful exit from Afghan soil, it is imperative to remember the long list of human rights violations during its military presence in the country. While the West claimed that the so-called War on Terror brought stability in the country, the reality is otherwise. Civilian casualties, indiscriminate airstrikes, unlawful detentions, and other crimes against humanity form a part of the harrowing reality.
The Operation Enduring Freedom, led by the United States, was launched in 2001 under the pretext of dismantling the Taliban regime. However, the outcome has been marred by a grim legacy. Since 2001, an estimated 75,000 Afghan military and police personnel and more than 71,000 civilians have lost their lives. Reports reveal that NATO-led airstrikes resulted in the death of nearly 1,600 children just between 2016 and 2020. Unlawful detentions became another contentious issue, with tens of thousands held without charges or access to legal representation. According to reports, 70 to 90% of detainees were rounded up without proper evidence. Secret trials, based on questionable allegations, raised concern with no substantial action ever taken. According to human rights experts, the actions of the US government in Afghanistan were a failure, and the military occupation was not only the political hegemony of the United States, but also the hegemony of the West.
The U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, falsely justified under the banner of counterterrorism, reveals a more complex narrative. While the pretext of America's longest war was to eradicate the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, deeper motives that fueled the Afghan war are often overlooked. Buried lies a tale of strategic maneuvering, political interests, pursuit of the mineral wealth of Afghanistan, and the astonishing surge in opium production that unfolded in the aftermath of the U.S. invasion.
Afghanistan's tumultuous history has been marked by decades of conflict, with the opium trade contributing to the violence in the region. Before the US invasion, the Taliban had banned opium production as it went against the laws of Islam. When the US-led invasion ousted the Taliban regime in the early 2000s, paradoxically, opium production surged, transforming Afghanistan into the world's largest producer, accounting for a startling 90% of global output. United Nations data shows a 35-fold increase in opium production since the US intervention, rising from 185 tons in 2001 to a staggering 6,400 tons in the recent years. While the official narrative claimed to fight terrorism, the US forces openly guarded poppy fields in the Afghan countryside and maintained connections with Afghan drug kingpins. According to some political observers, economic interests attracted America to Afghanistan and not the false rhetoric of cracking down on terrorist groups. Strategic relation experts say that the US invaded Afghanistan to loot its vast mineral wealth, including the huge lithium deposits, and to resurrect the poppy fields.
Minerals were one thing that the US was eyeing in Afghanistan or was greedy for in Afghanistan, it could have easily struck deal with whoever was in power in Kabul. That is what we are seeing now. The Chinese and other countries are rushing to Kabul to talk to the Taliban and get the rights to excavate, dig out minerals that are in abundance in Afghanistan. But I think the US did not go in for economic reasons. It went in for geo-security reasons to Afghanistan. As I said earlier, the aim was to make Soviet Union bleed. And I think everyone knows that it's because of the defeat of Soviet Union in Afghanistan that the whole Soviet Union then afterwards broke up.
Now let's talk about the women of Afghanistan. By omitting the history of the crimes committed by the NATO military alliance in Afghanistan, the United States has been trying to show itself as a rescuer of Afghan women. However, figures show the real picture. As per statistical data, after 20 years of US presence in Afghanistan, various forms of violence against the Afghan women have increased. Experts say there has been an astronomical rise in cases of self-immolation, trafficking, prostitution and kidnapping in the past 2 decades.
During the 2-decade occupation of Afghanistan, United States used Afghan women as a symbol to legitimate their bombing campaign in the country and also justify their war on terror. Claiming that the so-called war on terror was also a fight to restore the rights and dignity of Afghan women, the Bush administration declared that the US was able to liberate the Afghan women and guarantee them a rightful place in the society. Rejecting West's claim of women empowerment, Afghan women rights activists have been saying that the world has maintained a total silence over the atrocities committed against women during the US presence in Afghanistan.
Well, Afghan women sadly have been the most affected segment of the Afghan society over the last 20 or 40 years. And the problem is that they have not been seen as sort of a very important segment of society, which nobody can win a war without the help or support of women in Afghanistan. And I think if you analytically look at the data as well, I'm not sure, but I think Afghan women widows would be one of the ratio of widow in Afghanistan would be one of the highest in the world, if not the top most. So Afghan women have, suffered not just because of the war, but of the economic situation on the ground as well. They have suffered poverty. They have suffered a lot of problems in the last 20 years. When the US was waging a war in Afghanistan, the only aim it had was to achieve a military success in that area. And if it affected women or men or children, they didn't care about at that time. They did say on the surface that they are supporting them, through NGOs and welfare funds. But I think that was very little amount that actually got to these women.
Experts say that the early expressions of support for Afghan women in the midst of US military action served to paint a feminist glow on some of the most brutal bombings by America and its allies. Despite Western declaration of empowering the Afghan women, the female literacy rate in the country has not changed in the last 20 years. And the horrors the Afghan women suffered during the violent two-decade US occupation of the country still remain enshrouded in mystery.
We hardly get to hear about Afghan refugees in Western media and the severity of the Afghan refugee crisis. The humanitarian catastrophe brought by the two decades of US occupation made millions of Afghans homeless. The destruction inflicted on civilians by the so-called war on terror has been incalculable. The figures given by the UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, shows that at the end of 2020, there were around 2.8 million Afghan refugees worldwide, the vast majority of them in Iran and Pakistan. However, the actual number of displacements are probably twice the number.
Statistics show that at least 37 million people have fled their homes during the wars the US military has launched since 2001. However, experts believe the total displaced by the US post 9/11 wars could be closer to 48 to 59 million, as the international statistics generally count only the registered refugees. According to a 2020 research paper written by a joint research team from the US universities of Boston and Brown, in 2015 there were almost as many unregistered Afghan refugees in Pakistan, around 1.3 million, as there were registered refugees, which happens to be 1.5 million. Analysts say that this huge influx of refugees to the neighboring countries has led to socio-cultural, economic, and political effects in the host states, also putting pressure on their resources.
Well, it has been, of course, mishandled on a mammoth scale, for sure. Otherwise, we would not have been where we are today in Afghanistan. From day one, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, the US policy and its allies' policy vis-a-vis Afghanistan has been one of the failures after another one. We have seen that in the last two decades, they managed to bring in a system, a democratic system in Afghanistan on artificial basis that could not survive once they decided to leave. It fell apart the next day when the Americans left Afghanistan. The policy, if we are to assess Afghanistan's situation, we shouldn't be assessing it on the basis of the last 20 years. It should be, it's been more than 40 years that the US CIA and its allies like Pakistan have been trying to maneuver situation in Afghanistan, and they have not been successful in achieving what they wanted to achieve, a democratic Afghanistan.
As per experts, during the 20 years of its presence in Afghanistan, the United States played an essential role in breaking the Afghan society, leaving the people in desperate condition. The displacement caused by the US war in Afghanistan has torn apart families, neighborhoods, communities, alongside other forms of wartime violence.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by political analyst and journalist Mr. Tahir Khan from Islamabad. First of all, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Now, sir, the U.S. military withdrew from Afghanistan after 20 years of occupation. What has been the implications of this hasty withdrawal on the stability of the country, and also why the so quick withdrawal of the U.S. military forces?
Thank you for inviting me. I would not say a hasty withdrawal, because the U.S. and its NATO allies, they had already decided to leave Afghanistan because they were not successful. And they were the Taliban fighting against the foreign troops. They forced them to come to the negotiation table because the U.S. and the NATO allies were expecting that they would weaken the Taliban. And after the Taliban are weakened, they would go for the negotiation. But that was that approach was not, I think, based on realities. So this was the already the American had in mind to leave Afghanistan. And you would know the Taliban and Qatar and the U.S. A former ambassador to Pakistan and Afghanistan, Richard Olson, for the first time in 2015, they started interaction. But the formal negotiations started in 2018. And so the American had a plan to leave Afghanistan because they did not achieve what they wanted to, because they want to finish the Taliban. They want to punish the Taliban. This was their claim. But Taliban were more stronger, and the American could not achieve their objectives. That's why they withdrew. So I would not say it was a hasty decision, but because they were not successful to defeat the Taliban.
Okay, so talking about Taliban, with the withdrawal of U.S. troops, Afghanistan faced a rapid shift in power. What factors allowed the Taliban to regain control so swiftly?
Yes, I would say one factor was the division among the leaders in Afghanistan at that time. Dr. Ashraf Ghani and Dr. Abdullah, they both took oath as president. So it never happened in anywhere. I don't think it happened anywhere in the world. So there was division within the political leadership. And I would say the Afghan National Army was tired, I would say. And they were under psychological stress when the Americans and the Taliban signed the agreement in 2020 on February 29. So that withdrawal agreement was a psychological pressure on the Afghan forces. The second factor was the people did not want more war, because Taliban were fighting in villages, in rural areas, in mountains, and sometime on the road just to explode a bomb. But the people, there was no fighting in the cities, so the cities were safe, and that's why the people in when the Taliban started controlling the provinces, they started from the northern provinces. And Taliban had never been any influence in the north. But because of the people frustration over the war, they forced their officials in different provinces to hand over the provinces to the Taliban. So Taliban started from the north. They took control of several provinces in the north. This encouraged the Taliban in the east, in the west, in the south to move forward, because the army did not want to fight fight more. The people were not willing that the war should be shifted to the cities from the villages. This was the main factors: political division, the morale of the Afghan forces, and the people pressure on the leadership that they don't want more war. So this paved the way for the Taliban to take control of Afghanistan.
Mr. Tahir Khan, there was another thing I wanted to ask. Was the U.S., please, when they left, the reason I used their swift withdrawal was because they left a lot of their equipments behind, which is like worth millions of dollars. What is the reason behind that?
I was in Kabul in July, in the last week of July, and I went to the defense ministry in Kabul, and I met some official there. I was told by one Taliban leader, defense official, Major General Abdul Latif Hakimi, who was previously the Taliban spokesman when there was a war in Afghanistan, he was telling me that the Americans destroyed many, many things, even the airfields and some infrastructure they have built. And even they tried to damage the tanks and everything. But they could not shift everything. They destroyed many things. So that's why the Taliban government now trying to repair some of the tanks and the helicopters and other military vehicles. But the American could not take more weapons with them. So because they want to leave Afghanistan.
That's right, sir. Mr. Tahir Khan, the so-called war on terror in Afghanistan led to serious human rights violations by the NATO troops. Now, the perpetrators of the war crimes are still free. Why have the world organizations have been silent over this?
Now, this is a very good question. I would say the double standard of the Western countries, the double standard of the international, some organizations like International Court of Justice, War Criminal Courts, if people were killed in Afghanistan, there were strikes on the wedding ceremonies in Afghanistan, many civilians were killed. So in, they say this is not a human human virus. And the Guantanamo is Guantanamo was for everyone, because you may have heard from the prisoner who spent time in Guantanamo, because I met several the Guantanamo former prisoners. They faced a lot of problems there. So this is the double standard. I would say very briefly that the West, the Americans, the other Western European countries, they have a double standard. For them, human rights is issue is when it favors them. And from in other countries like Afghanistan, like Iraq, like Syria, when people are killed by the Americans or other countries. So for the Americans and the NATO and the European, this is not. So I would say this is double standard. And we still face this approach by the U.S. and the Western allies.
That's right, sir. Before we let you go, sir, one last question. Despite claims,
please.
I want to talk about the opium trade. Despite claims to curtail opium trade, the production of opium remained high during the U.S. presence in Afghanistan. So my question would be, how did the United States benefit from the drug trade?
This is very simple. If I don't stop the poppy production, poppy opium cultivation, and then they knew, because the Taliban, the American forces were everywhere. I myself visited Helmand, which was the main provinces for these opium production. And believe me, I have seen on the main roads huge fields of this opium production, the cultivation of the opium poppy. The problem is they were, you are right, they were not, they could stop this cultivation of this opium and this drug, but they did not. So, because there was a war and they were the control of those areas, but they did not stop them. So it means if you don't stop poppy cultivation or narcotic smuggling, it means you have benefit of all this. And this war, this American war in Afghanistan, the NATO war in Afghanistan, every time you can, if you go to the media in the past, the Americans factories of the weapons, some Western interests, they were involved in that war, because it was the war was run in Afghanistan by the American Western interests. So the opium production, I think they would be definitely benefiting them if they did not stop those poppy cultivation. And the problem is Americans have left. Americans have gone. They were, I would say, they were defeated. But they left the weapons problem for the neighboring countries, for Afghans, the opium issue. So now Iran, Pakistan, Central Asian, they are facing multiple problems because of the war in Afghanistan. And the Americans are now safe in Washington and New York, and we are facing the problem.
So if you could just shortly tell me, how has the government now contained the opium problem?
I think they had, I would say, I would not say 100% control, because, you know, the Taliban also, they knew that if there is no alternative to the opium. So although their leader, the Amir, has already banned this, and in many areas, in Helmand and other areas which was traditionally the poppy cultivation areas. I have also heard from many people that now this is not very easy for the very traditional poppy, the people who are involved in the cultivation, in the business. So to some extent, I would say it has been controlled. But I would not say that fully the Taliban have controlled this, because Taliban also know that if you totally ban these things, so maybe the people would suffer, and the people who are depending on this. And the second thing is the international community, especially the West, who brought the war to Afghanistan, they are not very interested to help the common people. Because when I was in Helmand last year, the local people were telling me that they were forced to stop the cultivation, but they were complaining that they were not given the alternative. So the Americans, the European, and the NATO, they should help those people who are forced to stop this cultivation of the poppy.
They have 20 years to do this. Mr. Tahir Khan, thank you for being with us, sir.
Welcome. Thank you, sir.
There you have it, political analyst and journalist Mr. Tahir Khan from Islamabad. Glad to have him on the program. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Izzat Ghafouri, a journalist, tweeted, "My pen is unable to write their pain. The crimes of America and England in Afghanistan are unforgivable. This young man was 10 years old when his father, mother, and three sisters and three little brothers were bombed and dismembered." Nar Edley, founder and director of Mint Press News, wrote, "In 2016, when the US military dropped bombs on Doctors Without Borders Trauma Hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, killing over 40 people and injuring hundreds more, the Pentagon investigated itself and concluded it didn't commit war crimes." Asif Durrani, Pakistan's special representative on Afghanistan, tweeted, "Being the champion of human rights, the US should voluntarily submit its record of human rights violations in Afghanistan and Iraq, where approximately 900,000 people got killed. At the same time, Guantanamo Bay concentration camp is still operative." Maliha Hashmi, a journalist, UN consultant and trainer, tweeted, "The US, UK and Australia and other countries must be held accountable for human rights violations by their military in Afghanistan." Chen Zhu, China's UN envoy, tells Human Rights Council. Alex Rubenstein, an independent journalist, posted, "Eagerly awaiting a Pandora Papers-style info dump explaining where the money from Afghanistan's opium trade is sitting. Afghanistan went from having 7,606 hectares used for poppy cultivation in 2001 to 328,000 hectares in 2017. According to US military, a 4,212% plus increase since invasion."
And that was our episode on 2 years since the humiliating US withdrawal from Afghanistan. We'll meet again next week. So till then, take care.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a question that, you know, a lot of people rarely address. That question is connected to the topic of charity. The question we want to ask is this: whether it is good or bad, virtuous or reprehensible, to be excessive in giving charity. You know, this falls under a broader topic, which sometimes is discussed under the heading of being wasteful or excessive in good deeds. Israf fi umur al-khayr, we call it in Arabic. This is something rarely discussed, and probably because a lot of people don't really give charity in the first place. So primarily a lot of what our ulama discuss from the pulpit or in their books is the virtue of giving